Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Hey, thank God there are no kings in America. Just about 2 weeks ago, we saw protests across the nation proclaiming, "We have no kings here." Fortunately, that's been true for 250 years, a quarter millennium. The ironic thing that many people pointed out was the very fact that we can have protests with horrible things said about our president proves the point. There are no kings here. If we had a tyrant, they claim, would there be protests? Of course not. And the very people yelling in the streets now are those same ones who demanded that we lock ourselves afraid in our homes during the COVID pandemic. The only excuse you could have to leave your home then wasn't to go to work. It wasn't to go to church. It wasn't to visit a friend, not even in the hospital. But you could leave your home to buy alcohol or to protest with Black Lives Matter, BLM. That's it. All right, we're going to discuss the apparent contradictions today and see that from a certain lens, it does actually all make sense. And joining me to do so is The Voice, our Pirate Money co-host, Mike Carter. Mike, we've missed you in studio the past few weeks. It was September when you were last here, given your travels and projects. How are you doing?
Wow. Well, I've been doing important Pirate Money work. So we're laying the groundwork for our legislation going into next year. I've been in multiple states traveling and meeting with legislators and treasurers there. And just had a big summit, so we are excited about what next year looks like. Just had a pickup and a committee hearing in Ohio where we're still working on some legislation this year even for pirate money, transactional gold. So good things happening on that front.
You did. And that summit that you had was fantastic, and your opening keynote speaker was incredible.
The great Rod Martin, who made an extra effort to fly in late and leave early in the morning just to speak to these legislators.
So. And they were blown away. And when I heard Rod giving his keynote address, I said, we've got to get that to Pirate Money Radio. Yeah. He has the ability to take something very complex that go, you know, people, I don't want to hear about, you know, the long march to the institutions and all of the, you know, evil Marxists and communists that came before. But he makes it simple, understandable, and it explains so much is going on. And with that, let's welcome our guest today, the great Rod Martin. Rod, welcome to Pirate Money Radio.
Great to be here.
You know, I've got here Mike Huckabee. My friend Rod Martin was policy director for me in the Arkansas governor's office. He's one of the most brilliant men I've known. That's pretty high praise. Or Peter Thiel, you worked with him. Rod is one of the nation's leading minds. He possesses a more complete understanding of America than most executives have of their own business. Peter Thiel, those are great compliments. And I got to say, they've understated how much of a contribution you're making at rodmartin.org.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's rodmartin.org because I happened to just look at it the other day and it's like, man, I have my Breitbart and other typical things that I refer to for news. You look like the new Drudge Report, but with like really insightful, intellectual, easy to understand information.
The new must read. And so I want to hit you hard. Rod, they had massive protests, no kings. Where does that stem from?
Well, it primarily stems from projection. They're desperate to give us a tyrannical system. But it also stems from the fact that they have so overplayed their hand on Trump is literally Hitler. You know, nobody buys it. And he's not a fascist. And nobody buys that all Republicans are a bunch of fascists, which probably makes a lot of sense when you consider that we're for deregulating the economy, cutting taxes, living within constitutional bounds, appointing judges who follow the Constitution and not whatever liberal whim may pop up tomorrow. So they're having to shift messaging because they've overdone it. But even that's ironic and hypocritical because they also had no kings protests in foreign countries. And in several of those, the country has a king. And so those countries, they renamed them no tyrants. So, you know, they don't care about kings and they don't care about kings here. They care about Donald Trump and the Republican Party dislodging them from their, as you said, long march through the institutions. But in this case, more just a long march. They actually want to seal the deal on one-party rule, and they nearly did last year. And we've gotten a reprieve. Trump is doing the right things. But this is far from over.
No, it is far from over. You know, Heritage did a great report a couple of years ago on the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think the same, if you did a facial recognition of the BLM and the No Kings and then the protests for Trump in 2017 when he was first elected, they're all the same people. They're exactly the same.
That's why they're wearing those dinosaur and frog costumes, I guess, to kind of hide their identity.
Of course.
The little face mask wasn't enough. They had to put a whole costume
they're
on.
They're trying to hide their identity. But here it is, Heritage. Black Lives Matter leaders aren't capitalist converts. They still want to dismantle the U.S. Explain, Rod, how this whole thing is an anti-America, anti-U.S. I mean, they tried hard to carry flags in these most recent rally, because the previous ones that they had, they were carrying Mexican flags and they were claiming to be pro-America. But tell me, why is this really an attack on America as an institution? Where did it come from? What's the history of all of this?
Well, there were more than a few Mexican flags this weekend, too. They can't really hide who they are. And the real problem here, once again, is they're aiming at one-party rule. Now, ultimately, they're aiming at a kind of globalist aristocratic system that is completely insulated from the voters because, as you know, we voters are really stupid and benighted, and our betters need to rule us for our own good. And that's certainly the aim, and that's the purpose of the European Union at this point. And you know, the World Health Organization trying to impose all these global diktats on all of the countries of the world, which have very little to do with health and everything to do with the control that they wish to exercise. So anyway, in this context, the Democrats, and we really should say Democrats because it is Democrats. It's not anybody else. It's Democrats. The Democrats have been taken over by their radical wing. And what we saw this weekend didn't match up one for one with the BLM riots and, you know, other things, because so many of the ones this weekend were aging hippies who are mad that they didn't get to go to Woodstock. And so, I mean, if you had just pulled up with a bunch of Depends and Fixident, you'd have made a fortune this weekend, you know. But that's who is running things on the left now. These elderly people, whether it's Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi or Joe Biden or whomever, and these really, or Bernie Sanders, or these really young people like AOC, who are seeking to imitate them and carry the revolution forward. That's really the issue. And all of this is infused with a heavy dose of critical theory, which is an answer to the problem that Marx was fundamentally wrong about his most important prediction. Marx predicted that you would have this dialectical combat between the proletariat, which is, you know, poor working people, and the bourgeoisie, the people who own the means of production, and that would ultimately produce a revolution in the industrialized countries that would bring about the communist nirvana. Well, the problem is that didn't work. They got revolutions in places like Russia and China and Cambodia that are just, you know, in the Stone Ages, compared to Britain and France and Germany and the United States in the same era. So you start having a lot of discussion about this after the Russian Revolution in the 1920s and 1930s.
Okay, Rod, so we're going to have to take a break here. But the point is it's not a No Kings movement. Ironically, it's a pro-Kings movement by a bunch of elderly white people who want to subject the rest of us. We'll be right back after this break.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and we're joined by Mike Carter, and we're talking with Rod Martin. Mike, you know, Rod just brought us up to the communist revolution in the 20s and 30s, and he's about to explain how they planted seeds that we're going to face here in America today.
Absolutely. Left us in suspense on that break. He's always on a roll. It's hard to take a break when Rod's speaking. So let's continue that conversation.
Yeah, Rod, yeah, pick us back up where we were, 20s and 30s.
Well, the 20s are 80 years after Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto, and the Russian Revolution is 70 years after that. And you still don't have a revolution in Germany. You still don't have a revolution in the United States. And so you have all these theorists trying to figure out why not. And of course, the answer is because Marx was an idiot.
All right. You heard it here, folks. Rod Martin declares Marx was an idiot. And we're not talking Groucho here. We're talking Karl Marx.
If only we could get college professors trained like that. I mean, that would be awesome.
Everything he said was wrong. And of course, his predictions were wrong. So they're having this trouble. They're trying to figure out how do we bring the revolution to Great Britain and America and so forth. And they started having some of these discussions, and a leading figure in that, of course, was Antonio Gramsci, who was an Italian socialist, contemporary of Mussolini. And of course, fascism was one solution to this problem, and it was successful in several industrialized countries. Another solution to this problem developed over time from Marcuse's thought into what we call the Frankfurt School, which developed something called critical theory. Now, a lot of your listeners have heard of critical race theory, but that's far from the only form. Critical theory has a lot of subsets, including critical race theory, but also post-colonial theory, queer theory, you know, all these different things. And here's the yang. They want to bring about the revolution. How are we going to do that? Well, we're going to convince people to think in terms of their identity, not their individuality. Their personal interests are subsumed by the totality of their interest group. And then we're going to make those interest groups smaller and smaller and smaller. That's the intersectional component of it. So if you have, you know, a transgendered lesbian person of color who is also part Cherokee, you know, that person is the most oppressed among us. But of course, again, this is, you know, calling black white and white black. These folks are actually talking about the people who are supposed to have the most power, not the most oppression.
But let's stop here just for a second. What you just described is the opposite, the antithesis of Christianity, which is about an individual's relationship with God. And there is neither slave nor free man, Jew nor Greek. I mean, this just goes against everything we know from Scripture to be true and good, right?
Well, not only that, it's actually even worse. It posits a situation in which if you are defined as oppressed, then you are incapable of doing anything wrong. So incapable of sin. If you are defined as an oppressor, as everybody on this show at the moment is, you are incapable of repentance. You cannot be redeemed. The most you can do is do penance through allyship, but you are never, ever not racist. And if you ask Ibram Kendi or Robin DiAngelo about this, and of course, Matt Walsh did a tremendous job with that documentary, Am I Racist?, demonstrating this in their own words. You know, you can never not be racist because you're white. Well, okay, let's take some stranger cases. Ben Carson is white in this analysis.
I've seen him. He is not white. Rod, I've seen him.
I know.
I've shaken his hand. He is not white. He's brilliant. He's wonderful. He's a believer. He's fabulous. But I've shaken his hand. I've looked at it. It is not white.
Herman Cain, Thomas Sowell, any of these people are all white, or at least white adjacent, which is one of these ridiculous, ridiculous words that they come up with. The idea is that though we are defining you by your most superficial characteristics, even that is a lie. Because really, we're defining you by your beliefs, which are dictated to you by whatever the current zeitgeist is. So basically, the DNC talking points tell you whether you're black or not. And Joe Biden said it flat out during the campaign. If you don't vote for me, you ain't black. And everybody thought, well, that's absurd and that's offensive. No, that was intentional. That is literally an expression of critical race theory.
Well, the same thing, I guess, that Bill Clinton was the first black president. I mean, he beat Barack Obama, right? He beat Barack Obama as the first black president. And I wondered, how could that possibly be?
And they weren't kidding. This actually makes sense within this intellectual framework. So where do you get with that? You have an oppressor class that you're progressively outnumbering by creating all these invented minority groups. And you make those smaller and smaller so that they have to rely on the party to be able to advance their agenda. You know, there just aren't enough of them individually, group-wise. But you collect all these groups together in, what do we see in classical Marxism? A popular front, like we had in Nicaragua, like we had in Czechoslovakia, like we had in countless of these countries. That popular front takes power, and then the communists eliminate everybody who is in their path, either literally eliminate them or at least subjugate them and remove them from the equation.
This sounds like Gays for Palestine, which I think about Gays for Hamas. I think about, guys, if you figure this out, go talk to the people in Hamas and they'll say, oh, yes, homosexual, we throw them from the rooftops. Right?
Well, that's literally true. A reporter went over to Gaza and talked to the local head of Hamas, because, of course, the real heads were over in a, you know, fancy condo in Qatar, and just asked him, you know, these Queers for Palestine movements are blossoming all over America and Western Europe. What do you think of that? You know, if they came to Gaza, how would you receive them? And he said, we would kill them. You know? They're an abomination to Allah.
You know, Rod, this is happening in the political world across the board, but it's been happening for a long time in the corporate world as well. I mean, I can remember in my corporate days, the targeted selection efforts they had. It was really affirmative action. But what you said earlier is, you know, if you were, and this is back in the 1980s, if you're a white person in the room, you were basically a racist. And they told you that. So you have to go beyond that to find these segments that you can bring in and try in the purpose of diversity, which I believe completely in diversity, but it was going beyond getting a diverse workforce to optimize innovation. It was going to the mandates, and that was in the 80s. So we've seen that creep in politically, corporately, and now we're seeing just chaos as it's...
Diversity only works if you have diversity of thought, not diversity of skin color. Mm-hmm. And even then, unity trumps diversity when you're wanting to achieve certain goals. I mean, Charlie Kirk pointed this out. If you've got 11 players on the field and you're called a football offense, but you're not working in unity, but you're working for each individual purpose and goal, you're going to do very poorly.
Yeah, exactly. Look, again, where I was going a minute ago was just this. It's all the same things we saw in every communist state that has existed over this last century. It just has different labels. So you have DEI officers in companies and various institutions. That's no different from the political officers that the Chinese Communist Party puts in all of the companies and institutions in China. All of these things are just the same. So, you know, bringing all these people together, you know, through intersectionality is really just a new label on the popular front that you have in countries that were overthrown by communism and some that weren't successfully, but the left attempted it. It's just a rebranding. And the rebranding is specific to America and the West because we weren't susceptible to a straight-up class warfare argument but they figured out how to get us to play off our own vices, our own envy, our own hatreds, and come together to overthrow whoever happens to be in power so that they can take power.
You know, I think about Manning Johnson, Color, Communism, and Common Sense, which was written in 1958. This explosive expose of the communist plan to use the Negro, because it's 1958, to sow division, foment race wars, and ultimately bring about a socialist totalitarian state was written by an American Negro communist, that was Manning Johnson, who defected from the party when he realized its cynical exploitation of Negroes was destroying the social fabric of black communities and harming his own people. That was 1958. I remember meeting Black Panther, Eldridge Cleaver, in 1980, who had been a part of the Black Panther movement and had been pushing the exact same critical race theory in the 1970s. And then he realized, hey, this is a communist plot, when he went and visited and saw how bad communism was and came back to the United States and actually spoke out against it at a rally my father held for President Reagan and for Jerry Falwell and others. So this has been recycled, and it's recycled again with Black Lives Matter, isn't it?
Well, and you just hit a really crucial point. Everybody thinks that this stuff is new because they just heard about it relatively recently. No, no, no. Bill Ayers, the political patron of Barack Obama, his professor and mentor was Herbert Marcuse. These guys were all thinking in terms of critical theory in the late 60s, just normies hadn't heard of it yet. And so, no, this has been infusing our politics, marinating our system my entire lifetime. And it's incredibly dangerous. They want to bring about a violent revolution in the near future, and that's why you're seeing this incredible uptick in political violence.
We're seeing political violence. We're seeing like the No Kings movement, which is we don't want a king from the people who literally do want kings. They just don't want our kings. Well, in America, there's good news. There is no king but Jesus, which is ironically, it's the opposite of what they said when they crucified Christ, when they said no king but Caesar in John 19:15. All right, we're talking with the great Rod Martin. We're talking about critical race theory and other critical theory, how it is a direct impact and threat to our life and our security and our values. We'll be right back after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
You know, America is founded on the notion of liberty, security, and values, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The idea that the federal government has a responsibility to protect us, to protect individual property rights, to protect our nation and our borders. But there's a group of people who want to destroy the borders and take away your individual property rights. And they tell you, you'll be happy if we do, but you may be a racist in the process or anything else that they need to do to tear down this country. And we saw the Black Lives Matter movement. And when you dug beneath it, you found Patrice Couleurs and others who are absolutely communists. They've been trained Marxists. They admitted it publicly, trained Marxists. And what were they trying to do? Actually, they were trying to take money. It really is kind of ironic. They act like they're communists and Marxists, but in the end, they were taking money and buying houses and doing all kinds of things.
So it's all about the money.
It's all about the money. And really, you know, there are three things you can do with your money. You can give it, you can spend it, or you can invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, it's a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the economic war room, Patriot Mobile, is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. And I was recently, Mike and Rod, at the Mercury One banquet. They're fundraising. Mercury One is Glenn Beck's nonprofit. They're doing amazing things. And I was proud to note that Patriot Mobile was a supporter there too. I mean, they're fighting these issues. So, Rod, let's go back to it. Patrice Couleurs, all those people in Black Lives Matter, and we find out they avowed communists, and yet at the end, they want to get themselves nice houses and nice things. That doesn't sound very communist to me.
Weirdly enough, it is absolutely the most common thing among top-ranking communists. As you know, in the Soviet Union, all of the leaders, you know, the top levels of the nomenklatura had their vacation homes and their private limousines and all of these luxuries, you know, because very much like the pigs in Animal Farm, you know, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. Well, communism, Marxism, fascism, critical theory, doesn't matter what you call it, it has one aim, which is to create a new aristocracy composed of the people attempting to create it. So Marx wasn't writing in 1848 accidentally. He was writing in the middle of the wave of liberal revolutions that were taking place across Europe, interestingly enough, against kings, hoping to create responsible governments that were elected by the people, possibly in constitutional monarchies, possibly as republics, didn't matter. Marx and Engels glommed onto that and said, hey, if they are willing to revolt against established, legitimized authority, then let's push them a little bit further and we can end up in power over everybody. We can just displace the current elite with ourselves. That's what communism always does. There is no form of socialism that doesn't do exactly that, and we see it everywhere. So it's not shocking that the BLM people were complete and total grifters. That actually does not contradict their being true believers. They just believe that they're entitled to your stuff.
Well, you know, we saw some of the same thing before Marx. It seems like the contrast, Marx can be contrasted with Lincoln at the same time. And you can go back even before that, and you have the French Revolution and the American Revolution. The American Revolution believes in life, liberty, pursuit of happiness / property. And the French Revolution actually was kind of a critical class warfare, wasn't it?
Absolutely. They could not be more different. You know, and of course, every socialist in the world, and especially in graduate schools, will tell you at length that the French Revolution was in effect the first communist revolution. Now, they didn't self-consciously think of themselves that way. Marx wasn't writing until decades later. Lenin was not yet a thought, but that's what it was. And there were people sucked in who were otherwise good people, like Thomas Paine, for instance. But the American Revolution was completely different. And that's mostly because of how it was established. It was not established on European Enlightenment thought, although that certainly had its influence on it. It was really marinated in the Great Awakening that had happened a generation before. So even guys like Thomas Jefferson, and just full disclosure, I've read everything the Founding Fathers ever wrote when I was a student at Cambridge. If they wrote a grocery list, I've seen it. You know, even guys like Jefferson were thinking Christianly despite not being Christians. And nearly everybody who we think of as a founding father was a Christian. They're all thinking in kind of the same mindset. So they believe that all power belongs to God, that it is delegated by God to his stewards, which would be individual people, that they then delegate some of that power to a government that is limited by that grant that it is given. And so rights don't come from government. Rights come from God. And they put it in writing by saying, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. An unalienable right is one that's so inherent to your being that even you can't renounce it, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And as we were talking about it at the Gold Legislative Summit the other day, that pursuit of happiness language is not just a rhetorical flourish. It's intended to go beyond John Locke's formulation of life, liberty, and property to say that everybody ought to be able to live in a way that comports with their own unique gifts and talents and desires, as long as it doesn't harm other people. So this is an incredibly expansive view. It is rooted in a Christian theology, and the socialist left, in whatever form, communist, fascist, critical theory, the labor movement in parts of Europe, doesn't matter. They are all opposed to that at its core. That's why Tim Kaine was saying in a U.S. Senate hearing that it's horrifying that someone would say that your rights come from God. That's what the Ayatollah believes, he says. This was Hillary Clinton's running mate. This man could have been president, and he believes that your rights come from government. This is a difference that could not be more stark.
Well, you said that very early on. You said that this is the Democrat position. Yes. That it lines up with Marxism, critical theory, and everything else. And now you've just brought it full circle with Tim Kaine saying our rights don't come from God, they come from government. The founders did not believe that, but the French Revolution did, and Karl Marx yes. did, and every modern version of communism believes the same thing. And what is the government? The government is the state, the party, right? That's the yes. party. And what does the party tell us is the truth about 2+2?
2+2, we are told by O'Brien in 1984, as long as we're just doing a tour of Orwell here. O'Brien, of course, is the party apparatchik seeking to break Winston. And at the end of that process, he tells Winston, you know, after a long period of 2+2=5, and he's trying to get Winston to say it because then he has submitted. At the end of that process, he says, 2+2 equals whatever the party tells you. And that's how you get transgenderism. That's how you get the idea that masks are somehow effective after Fauci told us in February of 2020 that they were basically like putting up a chain link fence to stop the wind. You know, it doesn't matter. Whatever you are told, you are to trust. When they say trust the science, they mean trust the bureaucrats. And when they change tomorrow, you have to trust them then too. It doesn't matter. We have always been at war with East Asia, don't you know? And we've always been allied with Eurasia. We're just living Orwell here with these guys. And that's a lot of what the revolt in the election of 2024 was about. Now, Donald Trump has to actually carry the ball into the end zone and win this thing, but he has made a tremendous start.
And I want to trust in God, not in my government. But if I'd say that, sometimes those on the left, these Marxists, you're a Christian nationalist. What do you say to that, Rod?
Well, if by Christian nationalist you mean I believe in a nation state, yes. If you believe, if you're talking about Christian, yes, I believe in Christ. These were not controversial positions until about 10 minutes ago. So, you know, they are very, very intent upon demonizing every thought that has been common to American history and actually demonizing the history itself. That's why we had this attack on the characters of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson a few years ago. That's why you had all these statues toppled in 2020. They're constantly trying to eliminate history to get to what they have called year zero or yar null. And of course, the most horrendous example of year zero was Pol Pot's revolution in Cambodia, which resulted in the death of a third of the population of the country.
Now, and a third of the population, by the way, was tragic, but I want to point out that it probably wasn't a third of the population because math is racist. right?
Yes. Yes.
So you've got to stop counting the 100 million people killed by communism because math is racist, and we're going to say that they weren't people. They were not because, people.
Because reason gives you tools to question, and you must not ever question. You must trust the science or trust whatever they tell you.
And if they kill you, then you weren't a person because they're denying our humanity. And we yes. believe in Christ, so they deny our humanity. And that's happening around the world. So they're talking about the tragedy in Gaza, and they're ignoring the genocide in Nigeria. And so some people have been harmed in Gaza, no doubt, but hundreds of thousands of Christians, a true genocide happening in Nigeria, once a very Christian nation being wiped out before our very eyes.
Yes, yes. And look, at the end of all of this, Tim Kaine's saying this deliberately. If government gives you your rights, government can take what?
Absolutely. All right. We'll be with Rod. We'll be promoting freedom here on Pirate Money Radio right after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and we're approaching Thanksgiving. We're entering into November, and Thanksgiving is coming. I am thankful for many things. I'm thankful for our great country. I'm thankful that our rights come from God. I'm thankful for leading intellectuals like the great Rod Martin, who's with us. I'm thankful for friendships and partnership with Mike Carter. But we're also remembering the loss of a number of powerful people this year. We've lost Charlie Kirk, who was an amazing American voice. We lost Vody Bachum, and we've lost Phil Robertson. Talk about three very different men, very different in background, in age, in skin color, or whatever, very diverse men, and yet all three would be carrying the same message with different voices. From one from youth, one from the Louisiana backwoods, and one from a powerful pulpit, but three great men nonetheless. Rod, share with us, you know, we've taken some big hits intellectually this past year, losing Charlie, Vody, and Phil.
We really have. These were great, great men. And of course, John MacArthur and, you know, countless others that we've lost recently. Vody in particular is a little disturbing to me because he's 6 months older than me. And, so that's basically a classmate dying, which is never, never fun. And, I know we see more of that as we age, but Vody was an incredible voice. He wrote an incredible book, in Fault Lines, about the problem of critical theory infiltrating the Christian church. And it just did a tremendous job on that. He was canceled to the degree that was possible by a lot of Southern Baptist elites, actually, because he didn't toe the line on BLM. And he called it for what it was, and he spoke boldly, and that did not suit Danny Akin or J.D. Greer or a bunch of those guys. But Vody is irrepressible. I mean, literally, he had to die to be taken off the scene, and he just kept coming, and he had a powerful voice that I personally, as his friend, really miss.
We miss him, too, but you take a look at him, and someone might tell you he's not black, but he certainly looked from African-American descent to me, but he didn't toe the line. He didn't share the very same things. I mention these guys because what we're praying for is not just a revival. I was speaking with Glenn Beck on this. He said, a revival is great. We have that happening now. Young people are turning to Christ in the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination.
People are seeing record Bible sales now. They're
back to churches, great Bible sales. But what we truly need is an awakening. And he pointed out David Barton. I was sitting right next to David in the audience. And he said, David, what does an awakening do for us? Rod, what would an awakening mean? Walk through the culture, and then we'll talk about money at the end of it. But what does an awakening do?
Well, historically in America, we have had several great awakenings. And of course, the most important of those turns out to be the original one, which was about a generation before the American Revolution. And, you know, a lower percentage of the American population was going to church before the Great Awakening than does now. And I mean, the country was kind of a mess. And then these amazing preachers come forth and just proclaim the word of God boldly. And there's this huge, huge outpouring of love for Christ and his mercy. And people really fundamentally change, not just as individual examples of salvation, as important and essential as that is, but actually in their thinking. How do we apply the word of God to all of life? And they did. And that's how you get an American Revolution that is 180 degrees different from the French Revolution that happened at nearly the same time. So that's what he's talking about. And yes, we've been praying for that great awakening for years. It's not enough that we personally get fire insurance. I certainly want to believe in Jesus so I don't go to hell. But once I believe in Jesus, I want to serve him in every area of life. And that's what's being talked about here. And we're seeing that change begin, I think. I'm very encouraged by a lot of the things we're seeing. We've seen Gen Z increase its church attendance 300% in the last 5 years. It's just extraordinary. A majority of Gen Z men are now voting Republican, which in large measure, not entirely, but in large measure reflects their newfound faith. We're seeing it in places like Miami, where we won the school board and we won the mayor, and you know, we've won some things we've never, ever won, precisely because there's been tremendous evangelistic effort in Miami over the last decade and a half. And we've seen that number move 13 points in the right direction during that time frame. So God's doing some pretty incredible things here. And when he does, nations change. This nation certainly needs that change.
Absolutely. And you think about this. All right, so if our rights come from God, not government, what else comes from God, not government? One of the things I want to suggest in the French Revolution, they said, well, our week should be 10 days because that's the number of man. And so we'll have a 10-day week, and it did not work. God made a 7-day week. It's kind of amazing. And they wanted to reallocate everything, the clock and everything else. Money is one of those things that they attempted to go away, and they've been doing this for centuries, trying to go away. God made money as gold, silver, and copper. You can read in the Bible, gold, silver, and copper. Our founders said, yeah, we don't want paper money. Paper money is made up of wood, hay, and stubble. We want gold and silver. They put it enshrined in the Constitution because they'd tried paper money that wasn't backed by gold and silver, and it failed. So our money comes from God also. God created the money. Well, that's important because if you're following God and you have an awakening, you look in the Bible and you say, what else did God say? Well, one of the things he says, he hates dishonest weights and measures and likes honest weights and measures. So we've been working, Mike, you and I have been working on pirate money. Rod, you've been a big part of this intellectually from the beginning, and you've shown up at every one of our summits to help us explain to the legislators. And you've met with, as we have, somebody that's actually taken that principle and put it to practice, Jason Cousins, who attended, and he's put pirate money into an app, which is kind of cool. Support for this program comes from Glint, a financial technology service offering a debit card and mobile app that enables users to access gold holdings for everyday purchases. With Glint, users maintain ownership of allocated physical gold, which is stored in a managed vault. At the time of transaction, gold is sold in real time to cover the purchase amount in local currency. Glint offers an alternative way to store and use the value Combining gold and silver with modern payment infrastructure, Glint clients can monitor their gold balance, view transaction history, and manage their account through the Glint app, available on major mobile platforms. More details about how vaulted physical gold can be used as money are available at glintpay.com/gold247. That's glintpay.com/gold247. Glint providing access to gold for modern spending. So that is an example of somebody who's read in the scriptures what God said about money and is applying it, because our rights come from God. They don't come from man. And literally, Rod, you've been helping us as we've taken this. I can't fail to point out that our first two states that passed pirate money legislation were Arkansas, where you were born, and Florida, where you live. Thank you for helping us get pirate money moving.
Well, thank you for getting it in Texas, which is extraordinary. You know, when you have Texas and Florida, not knocking Arkansas or other states that are doing this, but when you have Texas and Florida, you have an extraordinary anchor for this movement. You know, these states have declared gold legal tender, and a lot of people are still struggling to wrap their brains around that. But look, just think of it as a ledger entry somewhere, and you take your debit card or your credit card, depending on how that works, and you go to the store and you buy stuff. Well, your account is debited just like it would be if you used your ATM card, just like if you wrote a check, for those who still remember checks. You know, this is just not rocket science, and it's how the world did business before. The difference now is that you can do it electronically, so you don't have to carry around a bunch of gold coins. They can be stored somewhere, and you're getting the use of them at a microscopic level. I don't have to buy something in the exact amount of $4,100, which is the price of gold today. I can buy a stick of gum, and they just debit my account that amount of gold, and it's a store of value. God does demand honest weights and measures. We should also demand honest weights and measures, because anything else is just fraud.
All right, and so how does this throw sand into the gears of critical theory? How does this sabotage that communist movement?
Well, the state is the thief in this giant scheme that is fiat currency. You can't possibly have currency that operates as a store of value if it's based on nothing. Whereas if it's gold-based, they can't inflate the currency, which means debase the currency, take your value from you. It's the cruelest tax of all, and it affects the poor far more than the wealthy, because the wealthy have ways to hedge against inflation. The poor really don't. So we have to do justice for the poorest among us, and a gold currency does that more than almost any other thing you could point at.
All right, so this is fighting critical theory. What are your last thoughts, Mike? We've got about 10 seconds.
Well, I just want to, Rod, when we started this 4 years ago, you said, this is just another way to pay. And I heard that testimony in Ohio and every state out there. This is just another way to pay, but now anybody can buy gold. You don't have to be rich anymore to buy it. You have a stable store of value, and you can transact with it every day.
All right. Follow Rod Martin at rodmartin.org. If you have questions or prayer needs or comments, email us at afr@piratemoneyradio.com and pray. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. This is Kevin Freeman, joined by Mark Carter and Rod Martin for Pirate Money Radio.
Arrgh.